So this morning, just remember I told you a few weeks back, months back, how I got the Costa Rican coffee when I went to Costa Rica?
Yes, sir.
And how good it was. So we were trying not to go through it all the way, like too quickly, right? So we have all these bags of coffee and we put them up in the cabinet, and then we still buy like local coffee when it's on sale. Not local, like cheap coffee when it's on sale. So the past couple bags of coffee that we've had have been like from Aldi, and they taste burnt and they taste bleh, and it's not good, right? So today I finished the Aldi bag and got a bag of Costa Rican coffee down. And so we made the coffee and we're both sipping on it and we're like, oh man, this is so good. Like I don't want to go through this. So I set the cup down on the side table that I made, right? And I'm sitting there and we're talking, and somebody comes in the backyard and the dogs freak out and boom, runs across the room. It hits my table and knocks over my half cup of coffee.
Oh, no.
I've never been so disappointed in a cup of coffee falling over as I was this morning, because I wasted a half a cup of Costa Rica.
Is that why you're so angry and grumpy this morning?
Yeah, that's it. That's my reasoning.
Oh,
anyway,
boy.
I also had to clean it up. That was kind of a drag. But he's like, that dog is, I love him. But man, he is like Tasmanian devil wearing a buffalo. He's like crazy inside of a suit that is way bigger than he realizes. And it, yeah. Anyway. Mm. So that was my morning. How are you guys?
I'm good. I had a relaxing morning. I submitted my video to Infi3D last night just to see if they like it. I still haven't locked it, so there's some changes I can make.
This is for the milling stuff that you're doing, like the figures?
Yeah. Dave made an excellent video. David, that video is insane. It's going viral. It's crazy.
They also paid to do some advertising on it. So I would say a couple hundred thousand views of that video are paid.
Oh, I didn't realize that. But yeah, no, it keeps popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I did my version of that video. I saw Laura has one of those machines too. I saw her Instagram reel on it. She made a little tiny like measuring wheel invention. And so that was a little bit of pressure because that machine is complicated and scary to use, but I was able to work through it. I had a lot of fun with it. I've been showing it all on social media. And I'm working on my Onefinity. I happen to be wearing my Onefinity shirt. I'm working on my Onefinity video now. I finished the cat video and it was 1 of 10 for like 10 hours. And now it's like dropped down to 3. So I called Dr. Thumbnail last night. I said, what can you do for me? So we'll see.
Dr. Thumbnail.
Is it who
comes
I think it is?
Yeah. This is his new name, Dr. Thumbnail. I'm looking, we have an open text. It's right in front of me. That's what made me think of it. So see what Dr. Thumbnail comes up with today. And, maybe I'll leave it. Maybe who cares? I mean, you know, I try not to let these things stress me out when things drop. It's just, you got to do this stuff because you love it. I'm still getting paid well. If the views drop, that's okay. But when the income drops, that's scary. But you get nervous because one's attached to the other. Some people don't pay attention. Some people don't pay attention at all. They just think you're a celebrity and they pay you well. I'm like, okay, if you think I'm a celebrity, that's okay. You and my mom, pay me. But what else am I working on? So I'm making this interesting table. Me and Rachel were sitting at dinner one night and I was just sketching, and I sketched this squiggle, and she's like, oh my God, that would make such a cool table. I wasn't even thinking of a table. I just drew a squiggle. And she's like, she thought I meant the table, and I just was drawing a squiggle. And so I made it into a table. Yesterday I went and I bought 8 sheets of 1-inch thick MDF so that I could stack them up to make an 18-inch wide table. That's this profile of this squiggle.
Where do you buy 1-inch thick MDF?
There's a place here in Albany called Connecticut Ply. They're based in Connecticut, of course, but they have distribution centers all over. So Con Ply is in Albany, and they always have specialty stuff. Huh. So I went there and, I called them first. They used to carry 2-inch ply. 2-inch MDF, 2-inch lightweight MDF. And I did a project with the 2-inch stuff years ago, and I had lots of scrap laying around, and it inspired me to try and see. They said the 2-inch stuff now is special order. They don't have it in-house, but they have the 1-inch. So with two full sheets of MDF and one extra piece, I'll be able to make a 17-inch wide table. That's 17 inches, because I can get 4 squiggles at a time on the CNC machine. That's a 4x4. So 8 squiggle patterns 8 squiggle profiles out of each sheet times 2 is 16 plus maybe one or two more. So with 2 full sheets, I'm able to make the table. And with lots of cool, interesting pieces left over that I could make signs out of, 1-inch thick, lightweight MDF. I've been playing with that. And then there's something else I'm supposed to do today. I can't remember. All my knives came in. My knives for my shipping. So a few people in the audience know what that's about. They came in yesterday. 2 huge boxes of the knives came in from Dauntless. So that's going to get packed and shipped out today and tomorrow. And 350 pieces, I think. It was funny. The boxes are on the porch last night and this house is safe. No one's ever stole anything from this house. And I have cameras everywhere. I got like 15 cameras on the house. That's for those of you that think you can come and steal something. But I had the boxes on the porch all day yesterday. They're very heavy. And I thought to myself, no one's going to steal them. So last night at like 2 in the morning, I was like laying in bed. I was like, maybe somebody can come by and steal them. Why not? I dragged them into the kitchen. They're very heavy. And those 2 boxes represent tens of thousands of dollars. I'm like, yeah, let me bring them in the house. Never know.
Probably smart.
So I dragged them in the house. My house is like kind of private. Like to steal something, you have to like literally like be involved, which would be very dangerous. But I just, out of precaution, I was like, you know what? I can't afford to lose those 2 boxes. Let me bring them in the house.
It's true.
Yeah. So that's going on. And besides that, I'm just, you guys know the feeling. Anybody knows the feeling of when you finish something that was heavy on your mind and it's done. Even if it's only 4 or 5 hours, it feels like a vacation. When I submitted that video last night and all the stress and turmoil I went through trying to learn the software and make sure I don't crash the machine and make sure it keeps running. And the machine and the software is all still beta. So there's problems you run into and you're talking back and forth with the makers. And once the video submitted and it's over, I'm like, oh, I can go like change the oil on my car. Go do something completely useless. Go mow the lawn. it's like that sense of relief. It only lasts for a few hours with me, but it really feels like it's like when you the visualization is that like it's like climbing to the mountaintop and like sticking a flag in and just like looking at the wind. That's the kind of the euphoria you feel when you hit send and it's over for now. Until they see it and they go, you said at 3 minutes when you said it can do, could you remove that and change this around? I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. I can just manipulate everything I said 3 days ago and wear the same shirt. Yeah. So I had that sense of euphoria last night. Besides that, everything else is good. Fall is setting in. This morning it was a little brisk out, which is nice. Yeah.
Must be nice. It's like 90,000 degrees here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and you know what else is interesting? So humid. I can't promise who's going to get one of these, but Nick Birchhold, that'll be my recommendation. You guys go check out Nick. Nick, he's an incredible CNC artist and also just an incredible woodworker. He makes the most beautifully amazing things. He's making 25 axe handles, and he sent over a design. It's kind of manipulated AI thing because it's really just a fun throwaway thing. This isn't any high stakes. He made a logo. It says Nick and Jimmy present. He's making the handles. I'm preparing the axe heads. My friend at the flea market gave me 40 axe heads for real cheap. And they're all just cut off of old handles and stuff. And I'm laser etching each one with the logo. I'll send you guys a picture of it later. A logo that goes on each axe head. So Nick will decide who gets one of his fully 3D carved handles, and you pick an axe head, and then at the maker camp, you'll put the axe and the handle together at one of the stations. And so I've been doing that too in the background, and they take about 7 or 8 hours each to etch. So all day long, every day, you hit bzz, 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 in the background. I leave and come back, and I'm like, what did I leave on? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm laser etching an axe head. So I've been doing that in the background. And it's funny, I'm making progress. I got like 20 done already. I got to do about 30. So lots of little moving parts in my shop at any given moment.
Cool.
I had
to check my plywood supplier to see if they have 1 inch, and they do. They don't have 2 inch. 1 inch is the thickest that they go for MDF. They do have laserable MDF, and if you've ever used that, it cuts a lot easier than just regular MDF. I think they use a different glue or something in there. So I've been using MDF to make like templates and stuff on the laser. Just you get a cleaner, quicker cut with it. So just a hot tip for everybody.
I did not know there was laserable MDF. I thought all of it was.
Yeah, I mean, it all is, but I think it's just the types of glue that's in there makes it easier to cut through.
Gotcha. Cool.
I just put out a tips video, which I don't do very often, but making box joint jigs, and it's doing pretty all right. I was planning on making this. I wanted to make a couple of serving trays, and I didn't know how to make it interesting without just forcing interesting on it for the video sake. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to use finger joints on there, so maybe I'll explain box joints one more time, because that's worked well for me in the past. And so I made this video, and that was going to be a two-parter. And then I kind of realized, like, I don't want to do the whole two-parter thing. I'm going to separate them into two videos. So I just released the box joint version of that video, and now we're finishing up the serving tray portion of it. And because I now have more time for the serving tray portion, I'm redoing what I did because I think I can do it better. So like one of them, it has an art piece with a bunch of veneers that were cut, dyed, and glued together. And then another one is where the bottom of it, I took a bunch of walnut and hickory, cut them into strips, glued it together. And then once that was dry, you then cut an angle into it, and then you cut, you know, 2 inches or so from that angle on out. So you cut a bunch of diagonals out of those, and then you glue that together, and then you cut it one more time at another angle and glue that together. So you get this like crazy, kind of unpredictable pattern. It's kind of like a chaos pattern. And
like Eddie Van Halen's guitar.
Sort of. If you cut the right, especially on the third cut, like you have your bunch of strips on the first one, and then your second one, you cut a 45. And so then when you glue them together, you flip every other piece and you get a chevron pattern. Like people do that with cutting boards all the time. So after you take your chevron pattern, you cut it one more time. And if you line up the first cut, or if you line up all the cuts with a peak on one row with a peak on a different row, and then if that makes sense, and then you make all those cuts, you put it together, you get another repeating pattern that it's kind of hard to visualize. And like, I'm like, so the whole video is me like, I'm not sure what this is going to look like. We're just going to go for it and see what happens.
Yeah, that is hard to visualize.
And even in the video, I'm like, I'm pretty good at visualizing my projects. I can see what this table is going to look like. I can see what this piece of art is supposed to look like when I'm done. This, I just, my angles are confusing to my brain. I just cannot picture it at all.
Yeah.
And I was trying to do it in Illustrator where, you know, I have a bunch of, just like I mentioned, a bunch of strips, and then I would slice them and then rearrange them. But it gets hard because when you divide all the things, then you have to go in and you have to group them so you can kind of flip, and it's way too tedious. I looked to see if there was an app that did that.
You could probably do it easily with paper, cut paper, just slice it.
Actually, that's a much faster way. I don't know why I didn't think of that. That is a much faster way.
Trying to spin something and line things up. An Illustrator, it's so annoying sometimes when you try and spin something and connect it to, there is snapping, but it doesn't snap like side to side. You know what I mean? You can't free move something and have it snap next to something.
You kind of have to know, like the first time you spin something, you have to know the angle. Like you have to write that down. So the next time you spin something, you can spin it at the opposite angle or the same angle and it will snap.
So, I mean, this is also overkill, but you could do that in Fusion by making, like, you make your stripes as a single body, and then you use a plane to cut where you would want to slice like where the blade would go.
Yeah.
And then you could do a rotation on the piece on the face that needs to stay in line. You know what I mean? Like on the angled face.
But all the previous bodies need to be a different color so you can see that. And then when
you'd have to like join bodies, slice it, spin it, join the body, slice it. You'd have to do, you know, you wouldn't have a bunch of individual bodies because then you'd have to keep track of them all and move them all. But I think you could probably, it'd be messy, but you know.
But when you join them, they all become the same color. So then you're not going to see the pattern. That's the problem. You can do it in Illustrator, but when you start to get really tiny little pieces and you're taking your little mark, your little selection tool, and you're trying to select a bunch of little pieces, it just gets tedious.
Yeah.
I think paper is the way to go.
Just print out your flat image and go from there.
Yeah.
But it'd have to be printed on both sides? Are you flipping the pieces over or flipping them around?
So it depends. You can get different patterns. I would just use construction paper that's already colored and you could see the pattern. But yeah, so sometimes when you flip it, sometimes you flip it horizontally, sometimes you flip it vertically, sometimes you just spin it. And depending on which way you go, you get different patterns.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like that would be really hard to keep track of without it in front of you. Like you can't,
right.
I wouldn't be able to think very far down that path and like to know what it's going to look like. That's cool. For me, let's see, did I talk about the aquarium stand last week?
A little bit. You said it's going to be convertible for the skin.
Yeah. So it's, you know, steel frame with panels that have strong magnets on the back of them that'll snap to. And so I was, the frame took like a day. It was like so easy. It's just square tube, you know, welded up into a strong frame. And then I got to the point where I was like, okay, well, what am I going to skin it with? And was looking around at the material that I had, trying not to like go buy material. And I have some walnut plywood left over, but not very much. And so I started thinking down like, well, if I put two solid panels on the ends, they're like 15 by 30. So a couple panels there, I've got enough for that. And then I have these long strips. So I could do like fake doors on the front that are just shaker style, you know, just strips. And then I need an inset panel of some sort. So I started going down this path of like, what do I want to put for that inset panel? I don't have enough walnut. Anyway, I eventually I thought it would be cool to 3D print something that went as the inset panel. And it's a big area. It's like 27 by 19 or something. And there's two of them. Anyway, so I want to try to 3D print a terrain map so it has a random texture to it, but then it's all a single color. And then when it's vertically inset into a door, it's just going to look like texture, right? It's not going to, you know. So I used your trick that you did with the bricks in Fusion.
Yeah.
And I ended up bringing in, I tried a bunch of different terrain maps that you can just get like grayscale terrain maps online for all sorts of stuff. And brought those in, and they just didn't look, I don't know, they just didn't work. Like, they didn't look good. And so then I eventually found a really cool color wood grain picture. And it's just a picture of a piece of wood with big cracks running down the middle of it and kind of like a darker area. And it still takes the value of it, even if it's not a grayscale image. So it still takes the light and dark and does the same thing. And by using that and then playing with the variation in height, it ends up looking like a terrain. And then when you print it, it prints in layers. So you have the stepped surfaces, you know, it's not perfectly smooth because of the resolution that I did. And so then I had these big panels to print, and I finally got to use that giant printer that I have.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. otherwise, you know, you could do it in small pieces and glue them together. But I was like, I'm going to go for it on this big printer that I've only printed one thing on it, and it was tiny. And like, you know, I don't know if this is actually going to work. And the second one is printing right now. The first one took 23 and a half hours and had zero problems. Like, I'm amazed that I don't know why I didn't have faith in that machine. Not, I mean, it's made, it's huge, right? So it seems like they would make it to work with a huge print. I just kind of assumed something would go wrong and whatever. And it ran out of filament halfway through, and I just swapped the filament and started right back up. And yeah, I think it's really cool. And it'll be, once I get it painted, it'll be interesting to see how it actually looks in the panel. It's supposed to be subtle. But anyway, I was just amazed that that printer is actually doing a really good job on something that is so big. I mean, that entire 27 by 19 stayed adhered to this giant build plate over the course of almost 24 hours, which is kind of wild. Normally, stuff like that will, you know, start to separate as it cools off, and it's done really well so far. But
like, my first thought is anything that big, like, you lose your precision because the rails are so far apart from each other. There's always, like, you know, it could, like, it's like working on a very large CNC, but cutting a tiny little piece with a lot of detail. The rails are so far apart, there's room for sag or air or just kind of misalignment. But it sounds like it must be built pretty sturdy.
Yeah, it's doing really well. And, you know, usually on a printer, you can tell how good the printer is or how effective it's going to be at what you're trying to do by the first layer. So if you can get a good first layer put down, which is really, really thin, if you get a nice first layer down, then you know that the rest of it's probably going to be fine. And so that's what I was watching, this first layer, which took forever. If you think about that area, and it's going back and forth diagonally and making a solid print over that size, and it did flawless. That's wild. That's wild on a small printer that you have a flawless first layer.
An Elegoo? Who is it?
Yeah, it's
who makes
an Elegoo Orange Storm Giga, I think is the name of the
What's print. What's your working envelope?
It's huge. It's like, I don't know. It's very large. It's 300, I want to say 300 millimeters. Orange Storm. I had to look this up to make sure that it was big enough.
It's bigger than 300 millimeters.
I mean, I was thinking the wrong number. 800 by 800 by 1,000. So basically 31 and a half inches square and then 39 inches tall. So, I mean, you could, you know, print something really, really big. It is a gigantic printer. It takes up a lot of space, which I've thought about getting rid of it for that reason. But after having these big successful prints on it, I'm like, maybe I should just think about how to use it rather than trying to get rid of it.
So. Have you seen the technique where somebody will, you just 3D print, let's say a letter B, and whether you do it upside down or right side up, you're going to have a texture on one side of it, right? Either from the build plate or the pattern of the print. But where on the top of the letter, they'll put just a little bit of epoxy on there, and then it kind of bubbles up like those stickers from when we were kids, those puffy stickers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you're using surface tension to create that little bubble on top of there. And if you just print in like a white filament and then you put clear on there, it fills in all those spaces and you don't see the texture. You just get like what looks like a factory produced letter, and it's a really cool looking technique.
I feel like I've seen somebody do that, but I've never tried it. Yeah. So I've got that. Those panels are being printed, and that's the next step in building this fish tank stand. And I think it's going to be cool. I hope it's cool, because if it ends up looking stupid, it's a lot of printing and a lot of time.
But it's just the doors. It's not even the whole thing. So if you don't like that part, you could redo that part and you're still good.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, it's an inset panel I'm pushing it into the frame rather than building the frame around it. So I can pop it out and do something different if I need to. So that's really what I'm working on. And then I'm planning the next several projects. I'm brainstorming some stuff for Arduino that we're going to do. I got this new board that I know you guys are not huge into Arduino stuff, so this probably won't even mean anything to either one of you. But so this is the one that I got recently. This is like one of their newer ones. This is the Uno Q, and it's the same size as the original Arduino. It's the same format, but it has like a microcontroller on one side and a Linux computer on the other side. Mm. So you can plug. Oh, they just approved my project. That's cool. You can plug in like a USB dongle and HDMI, and like you can use this as a computer. It runs Linux. You can surf the internet and you can write Python and you can do all sorts of stuff on this. And I've done projects with this. I've done a couple of them. It's really, really cool. They just came out with, I'm not sure if it's actually available to everybody or not, but this thing, this monster.
Guacamole.
Yeah. This is the, look at the size difference.
Looks like a mini.
So this is the Ventuno Q, and it's basically like the same thing, but super beefed up hardware. In fact, if
how
you
much
can
would that
look
cost at retail?
I have no idea.
Like more than 1,000, less than 100?
No, oh, no. No, this probably is like less than $100.
Whoa.
I don't know. I know that this little one is $39.
Oh,
and
wow.
So this one is probably not more than that. Yeah, but I mean, that's also, like, you can get an actual computer right there. You have to get a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor, but that's like $39, you know? That's, anyway. So this one, this fits right there.
Mm-hmm.
So the old one, the Uno, fits in slots, like they have slots on this new one for it, not for it to fit into, but stuff that fits into this small one also fits into this big one in that same spot. Anyway, so this is going to be the heart of some upcoming projects, but it's just wild. It's got, you know, HDMI ports on it and USB and Ethernet, and it's giant fan so that it keeps itself cool. But you can do onboard AI stuff on this, not on the internet. Like, it can run detection models for video and audio, and it can do, you know, speech analysis and all sorts of stuff. So
let me ask you a question. If it's not connected to the internet, the AI, is it basically like an Encyclopedia Britannica where it's just limited with what it has packed onto it?
I mean, yeah, but that's really what we call AI. You know, that's just become the blanket term for large language models and the like, a bunch of things similar to that. And all the ones that people use are just on a server somewhere. And because they're on a server somewhere, they can grow and they can change, but you're still just accessing, at any given moment, you're accessing a limited amount of
information. So even though it's like an Encyclopedia Britannica, it's like 60,000 volumes versus 10.
Yeah, and it can be updated anytime you want. So for something like this, you know, English is kind of a known thing. So if you're going to do text, like speech analysis or whatever language, this already has enough knowledge to basically have English. I'm dumbing things down. This is not technical in any way whatsoever, but I'm just saying that it is a known capacity of all English language can be figured out and packaged into something that could go on a device. So, you know, when you're doing language model processing type stuff, you can package it. Like, so gestures are a thing. If I'm going to do a project, one of the projects I'm thinking of is gesture based. So there's going to be a camera, you make gestures with your hands, with your face, whatever, and then it's going to do things based on what it sees. So you have to train the model. So it's not going to know every gesture ever that you could possibly do with a hand. But if I know that I need a thumbs up, a thumbs down, a open hand, a closed hand, you know, each finger up, I take pictures with all of those things and then I give it to this model. And then I go in and I tell the model, this one means thumbs up. That's what that picture is. This one is thumbs down. And so you just tell it that with a set of data. And then it looks at between two pictures, what is the same about these and why is this a thumbs up? Hmm. Oh, got it. So now it can interpret a new picture by those same criteria. That's how AI works, really. I mean, we think it's so super smart. It's really just a catalog of interconnected data in the same way. So all of that can happen, both the processing of the getting the images together, storing the model, managing the model, using the model, all that can happen on these boards, which is just
no data center needed?
Nope. offline. You can just turn off the internet and it's all right here. No water, no pollution, no, wow. Yeah. I mean, there's a fan on it. The fan's loud, but other than that. Anyway, so my free time in the last couple of weeks has been thinking about like the possibilities of using a board like this with what I do and trying to think about, it's weird trying to come up with a project idea with a technology that you don't know the limits of. You know what I mean? Mm. It's kind of like you all with this five-axis CNC that you've both been working with. Yeah. Like you're coming up with what you can do with it based on what you already know how to do.
Right.
But there's another level that maybe you haven't gotten to, maybe you have, where it's like stuff that I don't even know is possible yet is possible with that machine, and I can't think of the idea because I don't know that it's possible.
Right.
And so I've been going through that with this thing, and I know that it can do this thing and this and this, and so my ideas are really limited to those few features, but it's also way more powerful than stuff that I've worked in. I'm trying to think too far so that I can back up rather than not think far enough to where
it's funny. So when I first got this five-axis CNC machine, I saw Dave's video and I was like, what can I do? He's done it. Basically, I saw like you like Mike dropped it. You like did the four materials. You made a hammerhead. I'm like, all right, what could I possibly do with this machine that's going to compare to what you did? Not better or anything, but just like, I felt like you tapped out and I was like, okay, I'm going to just have to do the same exact thing in my own version of it is what I thought. Cause what making a hammerhead is a great idea. But then I started playing with it and I started realizing, oh, I have a few models that I 3D printed. I could probably just use those models. Actually, the very first spark came from making a 3D figure from 3D DIY Dave's collection of makers. Of course, I was going to make everybody in the TV show, but at 10 hours a cut, I was like, that's going to take a long time to do, you know, all six characters from the TV show. And, cause they're all scanned. And so I just said, let me just do myself. And, the tininess of it really got me turned on to doing sort of jewelry, taking an approach to making small jewelry, which is why I just stayed in brass, just because it feels like gold. So, but it took a few minutes after seeing yours. It took me a couple days with the machine sitting there intimidating me going, what could I possibly do that would be interesting? Not more interesting than yours or anything, but just interesting in general that would get me jazzed up. Because when you have this technology sit in front of you, you feel like I'm not, in a way you feel like I'm not worthy of this technology. I'm not creative enough to do anything with this. That's kind of the first feeling you get. And after some time and I always say the subconscious does a lot of work when your conscious mind isn't really paying attention. And suddenly you get like a tap on the shoulder and there's nobody behind you, but it's you and says, hey, why don't you do that little figurine in brass? That would look cool. And then I started looking at stock and I was like, oh, I have this little tiny piece of stock. Would it fit inside that? And so then I went to the modeling. I was able to put the figurine inside a 1 by 1 inch piece of extruded brass. I was like, wow, it looks like it could be 10 feet tall. That's the detail that shows up in the simulation. It's like, let me give it a shot.
I think
one thing starts leading to another. And then I downloaded the skull and crossbones and tried that again. And then I was like, oh, skull, let me do something in the round. What could look cool in the round? Oh, let me do a skull. So one thing kept leading to another. But it's just getting your feet wet is really what it is. Like, Bob, you have whatever idea you have right now on your mind. And once you start working on that, you're going to get another breakthrough to go to something else. And you'll get another breakthrough from that to go to something else. And that's just making stuff, really. It gets down to that. You just really got to trust your initial instinct that it's going to set you on the right, on the yellow brick road, is what I always say.
I think there's a couple of topics in what you just said. One of them is, I think a lot of us do this quite a bit, where we see something, I'm like, oh, that's already been done. You know, I can't do better. And then that's a barrier, and then you just stop and move on. Or you can use that as a way to push yourself even more to think a little bit differently. To be 100% honest with you, when I came up with the hammer idea for that machine, I was like, what would Jimmy DiResta do with this machine? I didn't know you were getting one.
You stole
one.
My idea that I didn't already have.
Right. And I was like, how would Jimmy approach this? I'm like, yeah, having a machine make me a tool sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But I do this all the time. I'm like, oh, what would Charles Eames do with a CNC, right? And I always ask myself, like, what would this person do with this technology? How would they approach it? And it's kind of like my way of remixing something up in my head.
Well, I just want to interrupt. There's a reel going around. I don't know where it is. It's it's great. These interesting reels or these companies, these Chinese companies or these European companies that make furniture or make parts, and they jump into the social media arena and they just put up reels of what the thing does. There's no personality. There's nobody talking. And one of these reels came across my feed and it was a giant CNC arm, a giant robot arm with a router on it. And it was an employee changing out the formed plywood, the overall form plywood, say the curve of the back of a chair. And he just woke up and put it on this horse. And then he'd step away and the CNC machine would come in and just go in every single direction and route that beautiful curve that becomes the back of like a plywood molded chair. And I thought of you, Dave, because I was like, how did they do this 50 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And here you have this guy just literally just changing out preformed parts. They must have come off of like some giant hydraulic glue press. And they're all variously curved. It had three stations and one big giant robotic arm in the middle of the station. So he would change this. They look like kind of saddles in a way. And he put the saddle, it was just all form plywood, and then go to the next one, go to the next one. And then he'd probably step on a button and then this router arm comes in within 30 seconds, routes the complete shape that is this compound curve in every direction. So I just, it got my thinking. I'm like, oh, Pachuto would love to see this. But then my brain was like, how did they do this years ago? Just by hand, or obviously is just some other router jigs, which are purely mechanical. So technology. Well,
so like, I mean, thinking about cars in a similar fashion, I never really considered like how car bodies were manufactured at scale. Obviously a custom car, you know, that somebody's in there like hammering it and making it. Yeah. But you know, you think about the crazy shapes that are on cars. Obviously some machine is pressing these things. They're, you know, these huge dies that can press them out of steel or aluminum or whatever it is. And I never really considered that. And then when I started working on the Ghia, I started doing some research about that body. Now, part of the reason I like that car and that body is because there's not a straight line on the entire car that I'm aware of. Well, maybe one. But it everything is a compound curve in every direction on everything, and it's all one piece. The whole body is a single piece of metal minus the doors, hood, trunk. And so when I started working on it, I started finding these pictures of them being manufactured back in the 50s and 60s. And I noticed this because as I was sanding things down, I would go steel and then, oh, that's not steel. What is that little metal right there in between these two sections of steel? It's lead. It's like solder. Because all of these panels were hand-shaped or human-shaped. I don't want to say hand-shaped. They were created by a human and then individually soldered together at all the joints to make a single body. And so then once I knew that, I started finding like photos of people building these cars and just same thing. How in the world, like, why are these cars not $1 million a piece because of all the man hours right. that went into it? Was a cheap car. It was a, you know, it wasn't a nice car. And it's just wild the amount of effort that at the time was not a big deal because that's just that's how you did it, you know, but the amount of effort that went into something like that. And that's just the one car that I know of like that. I'm sure there are many, many, many cars and many, many, many things that are done the same way. It's just super easy for us to just get, yeah, everything's done by a machine. You know, that's just how things happen, but it hasn't always been like that, which is pretty wild. I like your idea of what would so-and-so do with a blank. Like that, we should definitely do a show on that.
All right.
Because, and I think it would be cool to pose that question to each other. Okay. Not for us to come up with our own thing, but like maybe for next week, maybe we all think of a person and a thing that don't go together super well or, you know, never interacted. What would this person do with that thing? I think that would be, that'd be cool. And we could even text each other in the week so we can think about it. But
It reminds me of when I was a student at the School of Visual Arts, and one of my very first intro classes, the teacher whose name escapes me, he's a famous designer, Richard Wilde, Richard Wilde's class. He's big in the New York scene and the school scene. Richard Wilde taught a class, and he said, it was really more advertised focused, but this could apply to anything. You take two dissimilar things and join them together. And one of the examples was a book cover where it was the swastika. It was specific to the body of the book, of the story in the book. Take a swastika, make it out of chocolate. And you take something that's so horrific and you add something that's like, oh, that's interesting. So you have this confusing image. And a lot of times as designers, you do that, you ask yourself, you're like, for instance, I'm holding a coffee cup in front of me that I made and it doesn't have a handle. And so I thought to myself, what if I made this coffee cup? And it's probably not a brand new idea, but in my world, it's new. If I made this with a dimple in it around the whole surface of the box, so then I could inset a piece of leather. So I have a leather handle on it, or even blacksmith steel, but then that would get rusty. You know, all of a sudden our brain starts thinking of all the negatives. But the idea of two dissimilar materials coming together to make something, or two dissimilar complete ideas, ideologies, or textures, or, you know, marshmallow with a graham cracker, or, you know, like, as designers, you got to start asking ourselves, you know, what if we make this with this, and what if it's made out of that? Or so, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what David said with the remix thing. Like, you know, it's.
Yeah. Same thing with the people. Like, what designer would, what if we had Eames making things out of leather? Or what if you had Da Vinci making things with a CNC machine? Right? Start really thinking of some crazy associations.
I was when I was getting ready for the art show, there was one particular piece, and there's a video on it, where I made the mermaid string art. It was inspiration from a cheesy string art piece that I got from the Goodwill. I'm like, I'm going to make my own version of it. And the original one was like this pretty little mermaid, and I made mine with a mermaid skeleton. And so the background of it, I started to get into abstract painting videos, and I was seeing all these different things that you could do for like textures and stuff. So you take a piece of burlap sack and you cut it and you kind of stretch it and then you put it on there and then you put acrylic paint over that and you can get some textures on there. And I was throwing some fish hooks and I was getting all these really cool textures on this background for this piece. And I was like, what if I made my own textures? Like, I could use my 3D printer to create some of these weird textures that, and it doesn't cover the whole canvas. It just covers a little bit of it. But then when it gets covered with acrylic paint, you don't see the 3D part. You just see this crazy weird texture. And that was me combining two things that you'd normally, maybe somebody's done this, I don't know. But like Jimmy says, in my world, it's brand new. And I never had a chance to finish those ideas for my art show. So I'm just waiting for the opportunity for me to have a little bit of free time to experiment with that.
Yeah.
I love the idea of adding 3D elements to a canvas that are 3D printed. There's a sculptor who I met. He's friends with Rachel. And this just, it just reminded me of it. With, he takes... David, I think it's David Chow. I'll look it up.
The artist?
I don't know if I'm saying the right, might be a different person. I'm thinking of David Chow. He's the guy who painted Inside of Meta, right? He's the guy that made the millions of dollars. He took, the guy just said, David, isn't David Chow the guy that took like stock options for painting Inside Meta and like overnight he became a millionaire?
I'm not sure about
probably
that.
Saying the wrong name. Anyway, I'll find it. I could send it to you guys later. He takes... classical Greek art, for instance, like these beautiful Greek sculptures, combines them with Fusion 360 or some other program, and he'll take like Zeus, for instance. Like Zeus would be like standing up with muscles like this. And he takes Zeus and he's like, what would Zeus look like if he was jammed inside of an invisible cube? And so you have Zeus jammed inside an invisible cube, and then you have an amazing robot arm sculpted classical, looks exactly like it was made in antiquity, but it's Zeus jammed inside of like this invisible cube. Hmm. Or it's like, for instance, it kind of reminds me of Michelangelo's slaves that were unfinished. You guys know the famous Unfinished Slaves by Michelangelo, where there's like a cube and then you see somebody like kind of coming out of them and they're not finished yet. But you could still see the cube. But imagine if the cube is completely gone, but every piece of skin, muscle is all to that invisible boxed edge.
Oh, yeah.
I have to find this guy's name. I might take a break and go ask Rachel. She's sleeping. But yeah, there is classical, beautiful antiquity art combined with the new technology of a CNC robot arm. And this way you could have fun and come up with the most incredible 3D antiquity type art, but then CNC it in a couple of days. It probably takes a couple of weeks with these white marble CNC machines. Yeah.
So wild. It is David Cho, and who I believe, quick search, could be wrong, but it is the artist that I was thinking of that you were talking about.
Is that who I'm describing?
Yeah. He's got an amazing YouTube channel. It's just I think he has a separate house where he makes all his art, and it's just graffitied everywhere. Like the kitchen just looks like a complete disaster. And it's so colorful, and there's just paint dripping off the stove and everything. He's also in an HBO show, or a show called Beef. And I was like, wait, is that the YouTube guy that I want? Like, I think of him as a YouTuber, but he's a
famous artist. Well, I'm looking at him now. This is the guy who was involved with Meta. I'm thinking of somebody else. He has a similar name. I'll find him.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're both very successful artists.
We'll get our facts straight. Facts aren't important anymore anyway.
So another, the dissimilar thing with the person or whatever, however we're talking about this. I've kind of run into this with myself recently. So with Arduino, they asked me to... as I'm thinking of projects, to think of something that I could make for them to take to a trade show, something that that could be put on site to show off the capability of this board. And even that right there for me feels like a big stretch, because basically everything that I make, I mean, almost everything I've made, there've been some exceptions, has been like, hey, I wish I had this in my house, or I wish that this thing existed, so I'm going to make this thing. And now I have somebody else saying, hey, what's something that you could make that would be fun for a lot of people to see out of your house in a separate thing away from you? And that sounds like, oh, freedom. But for me, that's like, I have no idea. Why would I make something that's not useful for me?
So I'm trying to figure that out. Is like, when somebody else gives you parameters to work in, my first reaction is, no, I work under my own parameters. I do it. But then you're actually given a place to work. You're like, oh, I can work within these walls. And that's it's a advantage that I need to learn to not say no to, or to have a negative reaction to that. But when you mention that project, my very first thing that I think of is what your brother did and with the storefront window.
Oh, yeah.
But do the Bob version of that, the expanded thing that does something different.
That's interesting. So anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, my brother and his wife used to have a photography studio, and they had this, they were in our downtown of our small town, and they had this old classic building window that faced out onto the street. And so he built a camera system on the inside of the building facing out the window, and had lights and had this cool sensor on the inside of the window. Basically, somebody could walk up and hold their hand up on the glass. It would trigger the camera to take a picture. And so it was called Window Booth. and people could walk up and have their picture taken. And they were outside. All of the stuff was inside. It was through a window. And then these pictures would get, you know, checked, and then they would go up on an Instagram or a Facebook so people could go find their picture of them and their friends. And it was really, really cool. And people in town loved it, and people were super sad when it went away. But that's what he's talking about. That's a really good idea. There probably is something there. And it's funny because that wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was a few years ago, but it wasn't that long ago when he had to build all of that stuff from scratch using a Raspberry Pi. And now, like, this single board could do all of it, like every single bit of it. That's wild. Anyway, yeah, that's a good idea. But to the you know, standalone trade show kind of idea, you're right. My initial reaction was like, oh, man, like I got to do something for somebody else to find interesting. That's weird. But then the more I started thinking about, yeah, but it's if it's at a trade show, you have a known space, you have a lot of people that are passing by that want to interact with something. And then I thought about like, well, when I've been to trade shows or shows, what are the things that stand out to me? What are the things that are fun to interact with? When I went to Autodesk University, a lot of the booths were like, hey, come talk to us about our plugin that manages worksite conditions for, you know, it was like a lot of like big stuff. But there was one company, and I don't know what they did. I have no idea. But in the middle of this trade show floor, they had a giant container full of dirt and full of stuff and a bunch of remote control construction vehicles. And people, and there were
That's
like
cool.
10 or 15 of them. And they're, you know, they were this big. I mean, they were not like tiny little things. They were this big, fully functional. So you could walk up. Controls are mounted on the side, and you would just start using the controls, and you're driving around, you know, some big loader and picking up dirt and dumping it in a truck, and people would stand there forever, and they had so much fun, and there was like a guy controlling a crane that would pick things up and move it from one place to another, and that was like a, I don't even know what they did, what they sold, what they made, but it was a thing that stuck out to me as like, oh, that's probably worth getting in line for, because that looks really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, instead of looking at it as a negative thing, I'm looking, what could I make that people would want to stand in line for? That's got to be, that's a good challenge. Like that's a thing to think through. Anyway, so that's where I'm spending a lot of my time this week and last week.
Yes, you want an idea?
Jay? Yes.
I like how you asked. That's a callback from a couple of weeks ago. Do you want to hear an idea?
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to hear an idea?
I mean, if I'm not going to use it, but sure. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Now, wouldn't it be interesting? One thing people are intrigued with, and there's an Instagram channel that I watch where these people do caricatures of people, and they pull out the most incredible flaws out of people. If there was an AI program that could look at somebody within a millisecond and then create a caricature of them in line art, that would be something people would walk up to and be like, do a line art of me, or do a caricature of me, or even if it's just a straight up line art, like a classical Da Vinci drawing of your face, you know, something that could like, but to take somebody and caricature them, and you could say Disney character, you could say, that might be, that's already done. I'm saying it out loud now.
Well,
it doesn't sound that interesting.
But there might be some interesting thing where you, I don't know what the physical interface of this thing would be, but some sort of a, you could draw it on a screen. Or you could also have physical things that can reorder to try to mimic a profile of somebody, maybe.
Oh, that's cool. Like a pin. You did the big giant pin face.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Hmm.
All right. Let's brainstorm after.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. That could be really cool. Just something that would physically show a person themselves, not on a screen. But
oh, here's something.
Thing.
My friend years ago, he claims he invented it. I don't know if he did, but he invented it 30 years ago. But now they're all over the place. Sand drawings. You ever see where the marble gets dragged through the sand?
Yeah.
You know, my friend Michael Dubno has one in his house that he made probably in the 90s. And he's made several versions of it since. And, imagine you're walking up and it draws you in the sand, but then you got to take a digital picture of it to leave. You know, so then it goes wiped away. So there's some interesting about the sands of time type of thing.
I have seen something to that effect. I don't know if it was drawing a person, but there is a there is some sort of a project where you can like draw on a website and then it mimics it in the sand or something. I can't remember the details.
Here's an interesting one.
Familiar, yeah.
There's a lot of mechanical maneuvering for this one. You have a big, you have like a fish tank, for instance, a low fish tank full of sand. And then you, to reset it, you pump in water and the sand gets all liquefied and levels out. And then you let the water drain out. And then a big mechanical finger comes in on a CNC and draws in the sand.
Oh.
Your image. And you have to take a picture of it because the water starts to fill in from behind. And all of a sudden the sand starts to liquefy and the image goes away.
That's so playful.
That is really
You're going to have people waiting in line at this booth to get their picture drawn in sand.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. Now we all have to make it.
Yeah. And if you could, oh man, maybe you like write something in the air with
your
finger.
Bob likes it. Look, Bob likes it.
You know, like the camera's looking at you, you use your fingertip to write your name or something, and then it tracks that, uses that as the thing that it's going to do in the sand. Mm-hmm. Like that would be really cool. Mm. The water thing made me think of, have you ever seen the art piece where it's a huge robotic arm in the middle of a room that has a squeegee on the end of it?
Yeah, that's in New York City. Yeah. I've been there. It's moves blood around.
Cleaning itself.
Yeah, it's trying to get its hydraulic fluid back to itself. It's leaking out, and it's like...
Yeah, it's at the Novotel on 42nd Street and 8th Avenue.
Have you seen it in person?
Yeah, I've been there. It's insane.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. Cool. All right, well, this was good. Thanks for the ideas. I'm totally going to steal them. I hope you do.
By the way, I sent you guys David Parker Smith. He's the one who does the classical sculptures in marble with CNC.
Oh, cool.
I met him. He's come to the go-kart. He lives in New Yorker, and he's friends with Rachel, and he does amazing work. David Parker, maybe he's my pick for the week, David Parker Smith.
I'll follow him already.
Dave, you already follow him.
Yeah, you do. You're in the screenshot.
Yeah, I see that.
That's funny. Cool. All right. Well, I don't have anything to recommend this week, so I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, and you guys can come up with an extra one for me. If you don't mind. Huge thanks to everybody over at Patreon. We've got a couple new supporters this week, and I don't have their names in front of me. I'm sorry, but glad to have you on. But huge thanks to everybody over there that supports us, especially our top supporters. That's Works by Solo, Tinia Space Industries, Rich at Low and Art, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Master of None, Jim from Wiserbees, Dad It Yourself, DIY, Chris McCormick from Hatch X, Chad from Mancrafting, Brian and Nancy Make Stuff, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But we're really thankful for everybody over there that supports at every level because they all get the after show. That's not why we're thankful for everybody at every level. Also, they all get the after show is what I meant to say. And you can get it as well, which is just, you know, it's a separate podcast feed after this where we talk about more stuff, extra stuff, stuff that we maybe is not public yet. And you get that by going to Patreon. You get that. Excuse me. You get that by going to patreon.com/makingit and signing up at any level. And if you want to do that, that would be awesome. We would appreciate it.
The after show is where we violate all of our non-disclosures.
That's right. And I have a
all
couple.
All of them.
I have a couple.
Oak. All right.
I'm under three NDAs right now.
Oh, wow.
And actually, one of them, I think, was for this, I hope. I mean, I think it's expired. I was under one for this, but... Yeah, I'm under a couple more. Cool. You guys got anything to recommend?
So
David
here's
Parker
Bob's.
That's it.
Here's Bob's. It's a video I just watched last night, and it was how a resistor actually works. And I was like, I've seen these videos before, but I could always use a good refresher. And I watched it, and it was the best explanation I have ever seen. It was well done. And this channel only has one video, and this is the video. And I subscribed because I hope they put out more, and it's really good. So I'm putting that in the chat for you right now.
Cool. Thank you.
And then my pick is the title of the video is It Took Me 25 Years to Realize What Jim Carrey Will Tell You in 10 Minutes. And this channel is called Inspiration and Motivation, and a lot of it is just like clips of maybe a celebrity and pulling it in and just giving you some good inspiration. There's like a drony music type stuff going on in the background. So it's very meditative. It's very calm. And I just find them really inspiring. The George Carlin one is also really good. And so, but I found this channel through the Jim Carrey video. If you've ever seen a Jim Carrey speech, it's very motivating. He is, he's an artist in his own head. He's like, Jim Carrey is basically a caricature of this other person. I am not the person that you think I am. And I just like his approach to life.
Yeah, he's pretty interesting the more I've learned about him. Cool. Thanks for the recommendation for me. That sounds like
it's a good recommended.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you guys got anything else this week?
I think that's it.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll catch you next time.
Love you guys. See you later. Bye. I mean it.